Okay, great. Well, that's a good place to start.
Andrea from Oregon.
Hi, who's that?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea.
Howdy.
This is Barry.
Hi, Barry.
And Siegfried here.
Yes, hello. I recognize your voice.
Welcome.
And Dennis in Sydney.
Oh, yes.
And you are the first on, believe it or not.
Oh, what do you know? I have a question. Sigverda, as a harpist, I just wondered if there was some kind of ormus I could polish my harp with.
Now, there's a question no one ever expected.
I'm glad I was
I don't know. Is it made out of gold?
No, it's just wood.
It's wood, huh? Well, ormus is pretty destructive on most kinds of metals and things. I wouldn't put it on the strings, but I don't know what the effect would be on the wood.
Yeah, well, I don't think I'll experiment because it sounds pretty good, but I just
ormus will dissolve a spoon. I mean, I have left a metal or stainless steel spoon in some ormus and come back and the whole bowl of the spoon is just about eaten away later. So it will dissolve metals.
So, Shandaya?
Yes?
I would suggest that you use the harp to polish your ormus rather than the other way around.
polish the harpist?
Use your harp to polish the ormus.
I must be a little dense.
Use your harp, use your music to inform the ormus.
Oh, yes. Yes, I got it now. Thanks.
So we've had a few people come on. Please let us know who you are and where you're from.
Hello, all. Lou Harris in Tucson, Arizona.
Hi, Lou Harris. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks for the great hour for this.
Well, you're welcome. I think I was just sent an order out for you this past week.
Yeah, saw that.
Did you get it yet?
Not yet. I'm expecting it.
Okay.
You got a quick question. In your bottles of your standard ormus, there's a little plastic disc. What in the heck's that for?
Yeah, that's just a spacer to keep the lid tight in shipments. So pull it out as soon as you get it.
Okay, I thought it was maybe some kind of a squirt bottle scheme or something.
No. Ormus likes to breathe, so it's got a bit of hole. It's got a hole in it.
Yeah.
But just pull the whole thing out.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh huh.
So who else have we got to come online?
Marcus from Germany.
Hi, Marcus. How are you?
Hi, Marcus.
How are you? How are you guys doing?
Well, good morning. It's morning for you, right?
Yeah, it's 2:46 a.m., yeah.
Yeah.
I think we have to have...
It's an absolutely gorgeous morning here in Sydney. Who else have we got?
I would like to lobby for doing these telephone calls at a different time so it's a little bit more friendly for Europe.
Well, yeah, and if we do it in a Europe-friendly time, it's totally unfriendly for anyone in Australia or Asia. In other words, if we had to do it, say 9 p.m. for Western Europe or 8 p.m. for England, that would be 3 o'clock in the 4 o'clock in the morning for you, Sigverda?
I don't know. We're 8 hours ahead of England.
Yeah.
The schedule that I've got shows that if we did it at 7 a.m. for you, Dennis, it would be 11 p.m. in Europe. And a little bit earlier in the U.K., an hour earlier.
Hi, everyone. This is Michael from Seattle joining the call.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you.
That would be 6 a.m. for Sigurda.
Yeah, I'm kind of an afternoon or evening person, so, you know, if you want to do it 11 o'clock at night, it would be better for me.
Well, let's just plan that for a future call.
If it was 11 o'clock here in the evening, it would be about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon in England. Or 12 o'clock at night, even. 4 o'clock in England. 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
What we want to do is we want to have an optimum time for the most possible people. Best time for the United States, since most there are more people in the United States than any of the others.
Yeah.
Second best for Europe. Twice as many people in Europe than Australia and Hong Kong and New Zealand.
We're exactly 12 hours ahead of New York time. 8 hours, I guess, ahead of the West Coast. No, 16 hours
Harry,
ahead of the West
told,
Coast.
I just got a news break from my techno friend here who has said that, sorry, I'm getting in. The very thing that I warned about on the last week's call, I'm getting now. The next door neighbor's mowing their lawns. Glenn said that it's ideal not to do it, not to connect the two rooms from Australia because it'd be a half second delay. Barry, would you be able to do that, please?
Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. The gentleman from Germany, what's your name?
Marcus.
Do you have any questions for Sigurda?
Oh, no. Right now I'm fine. I'm just waiting to hear what Sigurda has to say, and then I'll go from there.
Great. Anyone else that's come on the call, please let us know who you are and where you're from. Speak up now.
The reason we're asking for questions is because we'd like to focus the discussion in areas that people are interested in. There was something sent out, I guess, when this was first announced, that there would be a mid-month conference call that requested any information from anyone who had something they particularly like me to speak on. So just as you're sitting there, if you find anything in your mind that you want me to say something about, I'd be happy to do so.
Your comments on weird stuff with Armas and a recent post is very interesting.
Are you talking about the one that went out to Aaron and Howard?
About the rainbow.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't have anything to do with the rainbow, though. I've had a bit of experience with them, but I was answering them.
Is what I was.
I guess the topic of that was high strangeness or something.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, well, I've had a number of interesting experiences using Ormus. Things just happen. I mean, I find that coincidences, for example, seem to stack up.
Yeah.
And I find that the people that I run into and meet there's a particular reason involved. People contact me out of the blue sometimes, and they have, you know, information that I have been seeking, and it's amazing to me that Ormus has a way of creating coincidences that answer things that are on your mind. There's always a lot of strange things that happen when you're making Ormus.
I had an interesting thing like that happen. I was reading a lot of things about 9/11 on 9/11 and the day before about, you know, the conspiracies and this and that.
Yeah.
And, I was thinking about those towers and how they came down and all that, and I was recording an interview, and right exactly at 9 a.m., 9:11 a.m., my tower computer got a fire in the power supply and crashed.
Wow.
At 9:11 on 9:11, thinking about 9:11.
You have to tone down the power and create a potential of your thinking now.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's probably pretty common that I find myself, I know, driving in the car where there's a digital clock, or in my office, or in the bedroom. I just choose to glance at the clock at a certain time. I don't know why. And the combination of numbers on the digital readout is amazing. 1111 or 7777 or 8888. I haven't ever figured that one out, but it happens all the time.
Barry, have we got the public room in yet?
Excuse me?
I was talking to Bill to see if we'd
I haven't hooked it up yet.
Is it convenient for you to do now?
Well, we were going to wait until 5 minutes till.
You're there.
Isn't that true?
It's getting close.
Yeah. And that's about now, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay.
In about 20 seconds.
All righty. I'll see what I can do. I'm going to lose it for a bit, and there will be anything. Nothing will be recorded while I do this.
Okay. Where were we? Oh, we were talking about extraordinary sets of coincidences. When things, in my world, when things coincide, either in time or in location, they are connected. I don't hold coincidence to be synonymous with accidental. I hold coincidence means coinciding.
Yeah.
And that points to a connection between the nature of things. And I'm heavily informed by things that coincide. And I always look at the timing of coincided with what to inform me about what actions I need to take in relation to those things that are now connected in time or in location. I mean, just last night, I met someone who knew someone who knew someone, and they all knew a completely different friend of mine who wasn't in the room. And they didn't even know each other. That's funny. Who else have we got in the room?
Hello.
Please let me know who you are.
Hello.
Hi.
I just dialed.
Who's
this? Is my first time on a conference call ever in my life, and this is Bonnie in San Diego.
Hi, Bonnie.
Bonnie,
how are you?
Hello, everyone. So.
Hi there.
I don't know what I'm doing, so if I make a mistake, go with me. The conference call.
The only mistake you can possibly make is to get a whole lot of background noise. Otherwise, just enjoy.
Okay,
and
thank
you. If you have any questions that you want Sig Verda to speak on, speak up right now before
okay.
we welcome anyone else in.
Well, I do have a question. I just got rid of a whole house full of guests, so let me see if I can gather myself to ask it. There's Ormus. And there's gold, and some of the products have silver, and some are rhodium and iridium. There's all these elements, and then there's ormist. When you get a product, let's say if it says rhodium iridium or rhodium gold, is ormist something different from those other elements, or is it a part taking that form? And does that make sense?
You're talking about the products from Tibetan gold?
All the products, different products from different places have ormus, all the ormus products. no, I wasn't speaking of Tibetan gold in specifically, but let's say we could use Tibetan gold. If you have one of the products has more rhodium and one has more gold, is the ormus a separate thing from the rhodium and gold, or is it in the form of rhodium and gold?
The word ormus, we've been kicking this around for quite a while, is a rather generic term that encompasses or can encompass many different elements. The PGM and transition metals, when expressed in a fourth state of matter, non-metallic form, can be called ormus. All of them together can be ormus, or each of them individually can be called ormus. Okay? Different producers make it in different ways, some out of solid rock material, crystals, quartz crystals, or they can make it out of seawater, or they can make it out of salt. Brine, you know, dissolve the salt in water and extract the different minerals out of it. And all of that can be ormus. Now, you can do it in specific form, as according to David Hudson's patent. Like, you take, you know, an ingot of gold, metal, and do the chemistry on it and reduce the molecule and then atom sizes or the particle sizes down to its diatomic form, that can also be ormus. But that would be a single type of metal mineral reduced to ormus. So all of them together can be ormus, or they can individually be called ormus. Now, in our products, we add to that basic ormus, which is made from salt water or salt from Tibet. We add some colloidalized metals to those also. And that's why you'll see about six different kinds of ormus plus iridium. We call it iridium lining.
Mm-hmm.
Or copper lining. So that those are reinforced with a specific metallic colloidal to strengthen the ormus. The body can use the colloidalized form also. In fact, I think the body probably makes ormus out of it. Does that answer your question?
Yes, very much. Yes, thank you.
Okay.
So when I'm selecting... Okay, yeah, it does. They're separate. Like, for instance, your copper lining, then the ormus is there, and the copper lining is there in a colloidal form. They're two things, which the body then, and that makes a lot of sense with your product. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
That helps me to select one, because I'm looking for one that will help the endocrine glands, the pancreas and the thyroid, to make their appropriate hormones.
What I've discovered in using various ormus metals is that they tend to be somewhat organ-specific.
Uh-huh.
In other words, copper is very good for hair and skin. Iridium and gold tend to help your nervous systems. And also the mental acuity. In other words, they kind of speak to the brain. So, you know, as you're looking through the list, I think in the product descriptions that we have on our website, it tells exactly which each one of those minerals is known to help. So you can, if you're looking for something for endocrine systems, then you could pick out the one that is the best for that.
Right. Okay. I can search for, say, pancreas and pick out one for the pancreas and one for the thyroid and work that way.
Okay, well, when you're talking about the internal organs, you will also want to look at some of the teas because
okay.
Though the minerals will help many times. I mean, I've learned this from Chinese medicine that, you know, where in America, if you got a problem with your spleen, they take your spleen out.
Mm-hmm.
Here they don't.
Right.
They use certain kind of herbal medicines to strengthen the spleen or to cure what's causing the problem. And so there are phytonutrients in the various herbs and teas that will also assist those things. So that's why on our website we featured both the Ormus products and the herbal teas. We find that they make a great combination.
Okay.
Thanks for that question, Bunny. Now, listen, what I'd like to do is invite anyone else who's joined the call to speak up and say where you're from.
Cinders, Binghamton, can you hear me? And do I mute it now? Hi. How do I mute my phone now?
Try just hitting 6 or *6, depending on which room you're in.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Hello, my name's Alex. I'm from Queensland, Australia.
G'day, Alex from Queensland, Australia. What a good place to be. Who else have we got?
Aaron Elder from Clarksville, Tennessee.
Well, hello, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I have an interesting picture for you later, Howard. I have been using your dentifrice, and some flax seeds got in my drain. That's the same drain the dentifrice goes into, and the flax seeds went to seed and started growing out of my drain. So I thought that was interesting. I'll send that to you later.
Yeah, good. Okay. The Ormus helps even in the drain.
Well,
yes.
I thought it was interesting.
So who else we got? Come on, I've heard quite a few beeps.
I was just wondering, Dennis, is there a drawing today?
We're not doing a drawing today. We're going to do the drawings on the first week of the month calls.
Okay.
And so we're not doing that today.
All right.
By the way, you let me know
when you want me to get started.
Okay, sure. So listen, why don't you just go ahead right now, get started with the things that you wanted to talk about, and with some of the questions you've already had so far that you would like to speak on, and we'll just go quiet and listen to you.
Okay, well, you know, probably half the correspondence that I get is asking for recommendations on what they should do, what people should do for health matters, but the other half is more of a spiritual line, and that's why a few months ago when we first started doing these conference calls, I suggested that maybe we should do one on Ormus and spirit, and that's kind of the theme that I have in mind today, because I do believe that Ormus is a great assist, and I use that word carefully because I don't want people to think that Ormus is a magic bullet, you know, or a special substance that will automatically cause one to, you know, break all their habits and get out of the way that they've always lived, because it's not quite that easy. I wish it were, but it's not. A lot of internal work is always needed when a person wants to spiritualize. I think I mentioned my personal belief, and I don't believe I'm the only one that believes this way, and that is that I think that we have some examples in religious history of individuals who have, in fact, during this life, been able to become so righteous, and that's another word that you have to be careful with, that their body begins to accumulate more and more light. And as it does, then the possibility of perfecting the human body so that it can join the cosmos almost as a star is possible. But Ormus alone won't do it. People need to understand that Ormus is only an assist. But I think it's an assist in this way, that when you begin taking Ormus, that it actually, as an elixir, causes you to gain certain abilities that may have been limited because of of ill health. In other words, I don't believe we eat properly today. I think people in a more primitive existence, probably when there was not mass production of food, probably grew their own, and they were more selective in where it was grown, and they learned over time where the best things grow, and the food was much healthier. We don't have that benefit today. We are kind of at the mercy of all those who produce food for us. But if we can get ormus in our systems, and I use the word repletion, I think we are depleted of so many things, but if we're able to replenish and become a repleted individual where we have all of the good things that the human body needs within us, then it makes it much easier for us to perfect ourselves. And I don't believe it's something that comes overnight. I think it's a gradual building up from a state of depletion to repletion. And that, depending on the state of being that the person is in, it could be, you know, months to years to get to that point. But I believe that once we're in that state where our bodies are replete with all of the goodness that comes from the minerals and the phytonutrients of the earth, then our ability to experience expressions of God within us and also to express them outward is greatly increased. I was reading recently about some of the things that David Hudson wrote, for example, and one of the things that he said is that, you know, when two ions join together and form a diatonic arrangement, that one of them is forward spinning and the other one is backward spinning, and he expressed it as going back in time and proceeding forward in time, and when they join up, then it creates an expression of light energy. And that little particle of light is not bound by the Earth-space-time relationship. And I think this is actually what's happening when we take Ormus. Ormus is full of light. It's an expression of light. It's a mineral expression of light. I think the hydrogen that is collected by these little particles of non-metallic metal actually is a little bursting particle of light. And when we intake this ormus, we are intaking light in another form. But I believe that as we do that, then what we're doing, we're feeding our light body. Now, this is not new information because, I mean, the Egyptians basically did the same thing. They called it feeding the Ka. And I think what we have rediscovered in our age is the ability to do that. We know that the Egyptians utilized this strange substance that they called mukpats or manna, and it did wonderful things for them. Excuse me, I hit through my throat. But I believe that that's what we do when we take Ormus. And so what we're doing actually is preparing our body for a more spiritual state as we intake more and more light. I think all of the basic religions will tell you that we have a light body. They call it by different names, but as we spiritualize ourselves, then we're growing a light body. And what's going to leave this planet at the end of our lives is going to be what we have done with that light body. If we are to go on into eternity as the entity that we know ourselves to be now, then that light body is what's going to carry our essence. It's not going to be the flesh and bones that's going to be planted in the ground or burned. It's what's going to be ejected from this existence into the next one. And so I believe that our job as a human being, or as a wannabe human being, is to grow that life body. And I truly believe that Ormus is one of the ways we can do that. But Ormus can only do so much. You know, I remember the words of Jesus from the Bible where he says that, you know, only if you have an eye single, you know, will the light fill your body. And then he goes on to talk about darkness, that we're full of darkness. And if we don't get rid of that darkness, then, you know, we're going to have a bad time about it. In other words, life is not going to be good for us if we're filled with darkness. And so part of my studies many years ago, about 20, 25 years ago, I was working on classwork for a PhD, actually, in clinical psychology. And I used to have many, many discussions with the professors there. We talked about emotionality. And most of these guys, these professors, I guess we have to respect them, but they've been trained in a specific way, and I don't think it's the correct way. I believe darkness is very connected to emotions. I've expressed it a few times in a few of the things that I've written to other people when they've asked questions. But I believe that we can purge this darkness, this emotionality in our lives. Ormus helps us do it faster, but it won't do it alone, because the mind is very strong, and our training and our habits are very strong. And whenever we succumb to emotionality, then what we're doing is we're filling ourselves with more darkness. Now, I've gone round and round with the professors at school on just what emotionality is. As an entity, as a person, we are a bit different than the animals. In the animal kingdom, we would say that they have animal instinct. And what is that? It's a desire to live. And an animal will do anything it can to protect and sustain its life. Even the calmest of animals, when cornered, in order to survive, will strike back at you. Now, we're probably the highest form of all of the animals, but that doesn't mean we do not any longer have the same animal instincts for survival. We're different, though, than the average animal, which, you know, when they get up in the morning, they have to worry about, am I going to be eaten today? In our modern world, we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to be eaten. We'll probably get home tonight without a problem. We're not going to be facing another creature out there that wants us for dinner. But there is something that we do to survive as humans that animals don't do, and that is we have built a self-image. We work very hard on it. Our parents start when we're just born to develop us into an individual. And as they do that, we try to create a self-image. Now, most people, they create a large false self-image as they grow. Now, if you study Freud or Carl Jung, they will tell you about, you know, the id, the ego, the superego, these things. It's a way of trying to describe it. But it's actually the self-image that we have. And a self-image is not how we perceive ourselves to be, but rather it's what we want others to perceive us as. And as we create this thing, you know, everybody wants to be, you know, the best they can be at whatever they do. And I'm saying, you know, like the Boy Scouts say, we have to be reverent. We have to be honest. We have to be balanced. We have to have all these things, and we want other people to see us this way. So when we build our self-image, you know, we want people to think we're honest. And so we put forth an image to them that we are honest. But when we get right back down to it, when we go in our room alone at night, we have to admit that, you know, I'm not as honest as I should be. Or I'm not as honest as other people think I am. And so we constantly have a conflict with the self-image which we have built. And different than the animals, we're not going to be eaten, but what we try to protect every day is the self-image that we built. And that is what the ego is. That self-image becomes our ego. Now, if who we are actually at night alone in our closet is the same size as that self-image is that we built, then things will be okay with us. But usually it's not. We are not the things that we profess to be. We are not the person or the image that we put out in front of everybody else. We're usually something quite less than that. You know, we want people to think we're honest, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. But we're not as honest as we want people to think we are. We're not as true an individual as we profess to be. And the difference in the size of that self-image that we have projected and who we really are in the dark shows how much darkness we have in us. You know, back in the 60s, they used to say, what you see is what you get. Well, we need to be nothing more or nothing less than that which we have projected out there. And if we can, you know, there's two ways to do that. Either we can build our strengths up to the point where we are what we project to be. We are 100% honest. We are 100% loyal. But if we have any difference between who we actually are, who we really are in the dark, and what that image is that we put out there for people, then we got darkness in us. Every day we try to protect that self-image. For example, we have a lot of underground trains here in Hong Kong. And, the, you know, my mother always says when she comes here, you know, every time I go outside in Hong Kong, it's just like they let the stadium out. Well, that's true. It's crowded everywhere you go. And so there's only a limited number of seating in these trains. And so when they open the doors, I mean, there's a mad rush for the few available seats. And as they line the sides, the seats are along the wall of the train. Many times I'll go in, and I'll be in the process of sitting down, and someone will slide in under me. And then I'll find myself sitting on some old lady's knees. And so what do I do in a case like that? I mean, I ask every person, what do you do when someone does something that offends you? You know, our ego says, that's my seat. But it's really not my seat. It's anybody's seat who's in it at the time. Yet, sometimes I have seen people, you know, they've jerked somebody up out of the seat. Or they'll call them a bad name, or they'll do any number of things because they've been offended. That's our self-image. Why would we do that? We are doing that because, like an animal, we want to survive. What do we want to survive as people? We want to protect our self-image. We think we're important, and we will do anything for that to survive. And as we do that, what we've done is we've created more and more darkness in ourselves. And this is a very, very difficult thing to overcome, but it speaks very much to one's spirit. You know, if we get offended, we've got darkness in us. Because if, you know, we're trying to protect that self-image. We're trying to protect how we want other people to see us. I am important. I should have the seat. But in fact, we're not that important. It's anybody's seat. So if we get offended, guess who's got the problem? We do. I learned a long time ago, if somebody does that, I just stand up and smile. Why? Because they were better at getting the seat than I was. And I congratulate them on that. Now, if a person gets offended, and boy, I tell you, we live in a time when everybody gets offended with just about everything. And it's getting more and more difficult if you get caught up and swept along in today's modern cultures. It's easier to get offended if you allow yourself to. And what we're doing is we're just protecting our personality. We're protecting that ego. And that is darkness. If we feel like we've got something to protect, then we are the ones with the problem. So what I've learned to do over time I've learned a couple of little mantras, I say. And it's amazing how well these work. I will say, I will not take this personally. If I have a tendency to be offended by something somebody does, I realize I'm the one with the problem. If I take offense, I've got emotionality that needs solving. Now, they got these modern terms they call it, you know, anger management and that kind of thing. Well, it's a whole lot more than anger management. It's much more fundamental than that. If we are offended, that's a sign that we got work to do. You know, as I drive my car into town and people cut me off on the expressway, what do I say, you know? I mean, I've seen people give the one finger salute or you can hear them just talking in the, you know, silently. You don't hear them, but you see that they're really upset. I find I used to be that way, but not anymore. I just say, I will not take this personally. I will not be offended. It really doesn't matter. And if we can say these things to ourselves, what we've done is we've prevented another little bit of darkness from coming into our bodies. And not only that, but if we get good at that, and that is catching ourselves every time we tend to get offended by something, then we are actually eliminating additional darkness going in, but at the same time, you know, beginning to purge the darkness that's in us. And as we do that, then we'll get to a point where we're no longer offended. That's a great state to be in, because what happens is your mind immediately becomes sharper. You know, I mentioned to some people once before that I was semi-abused, I guess, as a child. I came from a military family. My father was at Pearl Harbor when it was bombed. He was at the Battle of Midway. The man went through a lot of grief, I imagine, just a few years before I was born. And so he was a typical military father, tried to run our home that way. And if somebody stepped out of line, you know, they got backhanded. And I had been backhanded across the room so many times when I was a small boy. And it made a big impression on me. But as I grew to adulthood, I forgot about a lot of that. And it wasn't until 30 years later that I began remembering some of the really horrendous situations where I had been really beaten severely, but I had masked them over. But the clearer I got, in other words, the more I became less and less offendable, the less emotionality I had within me, I began to remember things. And this is the interesting thing, and it makes me recall what Jesus said. Though your sins are as scarlet, you can be made as white as the snow. And what that means is that though we have had a lot of offenses to ourselves, our person, our mental well-being, these all begin to come out. They all start flowing forward. I have had really serious sit-down cry sessions as some of the things from my past began pouring out of me. Things that I had forgotten that happened 25, 30, 40 years ago. And as they came forth, man, my memory got better. And at the same time, it was such a great purge, a great relief. And this is what it means when a person becomes more and more spiritual. You, first of all, you're not able to be offended anymore because it really doesn't matter. We've got two existences going on here. We've got the finite existence and we've got the infinite existence. No one can escape either one of them, but we can choose to be an infinite living person, or we can continue to be a finite living person. It's what Jesus was saying when he said, live in the world, but be not of the world. And that's the difference between living a finite existence, where we let things matter that we really shouldn't let matter, and an infinite existence, where we are free. Jesus said, if you follow me and do as I told you, those will be, they will not be subject unto the law. There are rules, there are laws, regulations in the finite world. In the infinite world, we are unbounded. We are limitless. And we've got to be able to make the distinction. It's all right for an infinite person to be in a finite existence. And we are from time to time, but we should not stay there. We should not live in that existence. We can get along fine there because we've mastered it. But that should not be the place where we spend our time. We should strive to become infinite people. And if we do, then there's a different set of rules there on that side. We are not offended. Because it really doesn't matter. What really matters is, are we building this light body within us? If we're building the light body, that should be our greatest concern, because that's the only thing we can take with us. You know, when they plant our bones in the body at the time, in the ground after we're dead, if we haven't developed a light body that can transcend and ascend, then we're going to stay in the ground. But if we've got a light body...
May I ask how much sun gazing has contributed to your evolution that you've talked about so far?
I was going to cover that a little later. Because, I've briefly touched on the sun gazing aspect of spiritualization a few times in a few things I've written. And I've had people ask me, you know, where's your scientific proof? And there's a lot of things about this sun-gazing business that I can't prove. I can just talk about it from my own personal experience and from the experience I've seen others have also. But I believe that sunlight, as David Hutton said, he didn't say it this way, but I mean, from another approach, he was saying that ions, when they're combined into a diatomic form, they go beyond space-time continuum. In other words, there's something, light is somewhere outside the space-time continuum that we're bound up here in this world. And sunlight is like that also. We can intake sunlight. And I'm not talking about just going out, you know, without a shirt and trying to get a suntan. I'm talking about taking in sunlight optically using our eyes, and then somehow, magically, our body converts that sunlight into ormus. Sunlight and ormus, I believe, are the same thing. It's the reason why I call my products ormus. I call liquid sunlight, because I really, honestly believe it is. I was doing sungazing probably 10 years before I ever encountered ormus. And I know that the body responses I got when I first took ormus are identical to what intaking sunlight was when I first started that. They are just the same. You know, our body will condense light into all the things that we need. I've done an awful lot of studying about the Essenes. I've read everything I could get my hands on, and there's some pretty ancient writings about them. Pliny the Elder, Josephus. These guys, you know, were historians. One Roman, one was a Jewish Roman. But he actually went out and stayed with the Essenes. Mariotis, which is in near Alexandria in Egypt, and also in Palestine. And what they wrote about was these people only ate light bread, unleavened bread, and drank water. That's it. Now, we don't think that's probably a very good diet, but these people had lifespans that were 120, 130, 140 years. What they did do was they intook sunlight three times a day, at dawn, at sunset, and at midday. Now, these were very experienced sun gazers, probably the best there ever were. But the body will manufacture, I like to think that the body is a factory, and it will manufacture whatever it needs, whenever it needs it, if it's given the right energy combination, and that energy combination can come from light. It can come from warmth. It can come from sunlight. There's not a lot of difference between the two. But it's another way of building the light body. You know, I think some of the religions say that, you know, no one can look upon the face of God and live, meaning that the intensity of the Almighty, however you perceive him to be, is so great, the energy emanating from him or her is so great that an average human cannot endure it. They would burn up. And there's so many scriptures, both in the Vedic scriptures and also in the Christian scriptures and some in the Buddhist writings, where it says that this light will cause some people to burn as stubble. You know, there's quite a famous one in Micah, the last book of the Old Testament. It's a short book, got four chapters only, very short ones. But in one of them, it says that, you know, in the last days, which I think we're probably in right now, there's going to be a new sun, and it's called the S-U-N, Sun of Righteousness, is going to come forth. And I think we would all agree in these days of global warming that the sun has changed and that it is changing. And I don't think global warming is brought about by anything mankind is doing. I think it's happening because the sun itself is changing. And we have got to be able to endure that light. And, you know, if you keep yourself in a dark room all the time, sitting on the couch watching TV, you are not going to be getting the kind of light that will save you. We have to develop a relationship with the sun, morning, evening, and if one is experienced enough and capable, at other times during the day. Now, if we can do that, we're going to have two or three spiritual things happen at once. and that is the intake of light is going to heal our bodies just like Ormus would do. The other thing is we will enrich the light bodies because that is an energetic being of light. Now, I find that sunlight and Ormus is a tremendous combination. You know, if a person is regularly taking Ormus, that Ormus in us will also collect additional light. Now, Barry's also talked about this, too, and that is that, you know, we become an Ormus magnet. I believe a person who's taking Ormus, I think it's Barry who said that, you know, once he started taking a lot of Ormus, or that's sufficiently saturated with it, that he no longer was able to get a sunburn, a suntan. That's very true, and that's because light will protect the body. You know, if you are not capable of intaking light of greater and greater intensity over time, and it's just like any other muscle in the body, you know, our retinas, you know, the doctors will say if you hurt your retinas, you know, they'll never go back. That is not true. In my early days of sun gazing, I had spots in front of my eyes for weeks at a time. One time I thought I was going to go absolutely blind. I thought I had overdone it. But, you know, I prayed, and 10 days later my eyesight came back stronger than it was before. I mean, I'm 60, almost 61 years old now, and I don't wear glasses. Everybody else in my family wears glasses. I'm the only one who goes out and looks at the sun. The retinas will heal themselves, and not only that, they strengthen as one becomes more and more accustomed to the light. I don't particularly want to make this a discussion about sun gazing, but I could. But all I'm saying is that, you know, Ormus and sunlight are very similar commodities. You know, it's just a slightly different form of the same thing. That Ormus and sunlight is a tremendous combination. I believe we are to be children of light, and we cannot be that if we're going to be afraid of light. If we're going to build a light body, we cannot be afraid of light. We have to be able to condition ourselves to intake greater and greater quantities of light. Now, from a physiological standpoint, your optic nerves from behind the retina, they meet, you know, right in front of the pineal gland. It's called an optic chiasma, which is like a ganglia of nerve endings. But they meet right next door, I mean, just, you know, within millimeters of the pineal gland. As we intake sunlight and strengthen our eyes and our nervous systems through that light, we are also invigorating all the other endocrine glands within the body because they are keyed off the pineal and the pituitary. And the optic chiasma, which collects all the light energy, is right there with them. It's like the pituitary, the pineal, and the optic chiasma are like a little triad right there in the center of your skull. And so, you know, we are animals that are meant to take in light. So anyway, so much on sun gazing. But it's very beneficial to the body if it's done correctly. It takes some time to research it and know what you can do. It also takes some time to condition your body to intake more and more. But I can assure you, you know, in the first few times you do it, you're going to see sunspots. But as you get more and more conditioned to the light, you won't see sunspots anymore. You'll be able to see auras around plants. You'll be able to see auras around people. You will have a different kind of sight. You will have all the sights you ever always had, but you'll also have spiritual sight. These are some of the benefits of increasing sunlight. But Ormus will do the same thing. It just does it in a slightly different fashion. That's why they, to me, you know, this is an unbeatable combination as assists to our spiritualization. building that light body is our job. It is the reason we were born. If we do not build it, we are going to come back and do this again until we do it right, until we get it done right. I believe that's the purpose of our life, is to rejoin the source. Now, what is that source? We will have to go through the sun in order to get back to our source, the sun behind the sun, the great central sun of our galaxy. That's our origin. That's where we will go. We will be one of those stars in heaven, you know, as the ancient pharaohs believed that they would be. Or we will go and stay there for a time until we get, you know, more and gain more and more progress. But this is the reason why we should become spiritual. We can't do that if we're filled with darkness. We have got to conquer emotionality in our lives. We cannot let things matter that really don't matter. We should not ever be able to be offended. We should be able to say, I can't be offended, I will not be offended. Because every time we get offended, we have deposited a little bit more darkness in our lives. You know, every time we get angry, we are depositing a bit more darkness in our souls. And it's possible to get so full of darkness that you will never in one lifetime be able to get rid of it all.
Good. Are you willing to take some questions from the rooms at the moment?
Sure.
How do I mute my phone?
Who'd like to be first?
How do I mute my phone when I'm listening?
Six. Don't worry about muting. Just ask the question you want to ask.
Anybody have any questions?
Have you done any tests with any of your products with EEG, electroencephalogram? I know some of the Ormus products have been actually tested with people hooked themselves up to EEG, and they found...
No, I haven't done that, but it would be interesting to see, because There's still a bit of reluctance on some people to do things like this over in this part of the world. And we haven't done it, but I'd like to do that. I'd like to do that on myself. Was that Barry asking the question?
Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions?
And please let us know who you are. Before you ask the question, and where you're from.
This is Shandaya from Oregon. I live in the western part of the state where it rains a lot. Do you have any suggestions about sun gazing when it's just clouded over or whatever? Not bright.
The light is still coming through. Otherwise, I mean, it's just a bit dimmer. And keep in mind also that there's UV light that's coming through those clouds. In fact, you know, I mean, the people who worry about getting sunburn, they'll tell you that you can get more sunburn on a cloudy day than you can on a bright sunny day. And that's certainly true. You can still intake sunlight even on a cloudy day if you're able to locate the direction of the sun. Pretty difficult on the really cloudy days. I like, you know, we just had a big typhoon come through over here in China. And, you know, we had about 7 or 8 days of constant rain, so it's pretty hard to see the sun. Speaking of that, you know, I'm from New Orleans, and so, you know, a lot of my kinfolks are still repairing after Katrina, and it's interesting to me that, you know, they had about 7 or 8 or 9, even 10 really bad hurricanes last year in the Gulf of Mexico in the eastern part of Florida. This year they've had almost nothing. They've all been over here in the South China Sea. We have had 4 or 5 already, and we're going to have a few more, I think. So, though the hurricane predictors were predicting so much worse this year than last, they didn't happen on that side of the world. They're over here this year. But anyway, we, we've had lots and lots of cloudy days in the last few months. But that doesn't mean you can't sungaze. Now, I wrote something not long ago, and that was that, you know, crack of dawn, 30 minutes before sundown is the best time for someone who's new at this. Keep in mind that even if it's cloudy, you can still get some sunlight, and it doesn't have to be continuous. You can get 5 minutes here, 2 minutes there, 3 minutes there. Just get your eyes prepared whenever you have a little bit of light available. Does that answer your question, Chandaya?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
So who else would like to ask a question?
I have a question. This is Bonnie in San Diego.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. We have a lot of sunlight, so except during.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I'm near the coast, so sometimes we're in. But I'm wondering, I'm just outside a lot. For instance,
yeah.
Just doing things, you know, gardening or just watering the plants or just doing just chores. And if
well,
I don't think
you know, a bit of sunlight on your body is okay.
Well, what I mean
but
is, am I getting? Does that help? If I'm not sun gazing, but I'm just out there, does that help too?
It helps a little bit. I mean, the doctors will tell you, you know, if you stay inside all the time, you're not going to be healthy. You got to get out in the sunlight. The body makes vitamin D for one thing. It also makes many other things from exposure to the sunlight. But if your concern is to build a light body, you know, sun on your back or on your arms or legs is not going to do that.
Okay.
You're going to need to start intaking sunlight through your eyes.
Okay.
Now, there's different kind of light, by the way. There's, as the sun moves across the Earth's surface, in the early mornings, there's a lot of really soft, ultraviolet light, and there's a whole range of the ultraviolet spectrum. You get that in the early morning at meridian or noontime, it begins to transition into the infrared spectrum, and in the afternoon, you're going to get the infrared spectrum all the way to sundown. You know, I mean, in the morning, you look at the sun, it's very bright. A bit lavender in color, some of the light coming out of it. You can actually see it. That's your infrared spectrum. In the afternoon, when the sun goes down, what do you see? Red, oranges, those colors. That's the infrared spectrum. So past noon, you get the infrared spectrum. Before noon, you're getting the ultraviolet spectrum. Now, here's the thing. The body itself does best with the infrared. The spirit, the light body, does better with the ultraviolet spectrum, which you intake through your eyes. And so, you know, if you want to go out in the sunlight, go in the afternoon just to get it, you know, on your body. If you're going to try to build your light body, the morning light is better. And just at the crack of dawn is the best time. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. That's perfect. Mm. That's just what I was asking. Yes, thank you. That's very important because I was thinking that because I'm out there so much, I'm in and out that didn't have. So I realized.
Well, you know, I lived in Carlsbad and Escondido for about 5 years, so I'm familiar with that area.
Mm-hmm. But now I know I have to do it with the. It has to go in through the eyes for the spiritual.
Yeah, and by the way, if you wear glasses or contact lenses, you take them off.
Yes.
Because you know, if you're looking through some kind of a lens, that's going to give you a different focus of light. And by the way, people who do sungazing usually improve their eyes. I mean, it's a chance that if you wear glasses now after sunbathing a while, you won't need them.
Good.
Because your eyes will strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a couple of programs out there that they're selling, you know, get rid of your glasses kind of programs, and that has to do with being able to intake more and more light. The light is healing to the eyes. It's not detrimental to the eyes. So don't listen to the people that tell you you'll hurt yourself or you'll burn your retinas or you'll destroy your sight, you'll go blind. No, that's not true if you do it carefully and intelligently. Any other questions?
There's a chance that you'll go blonde.
Huh? You'll go blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You may go blonde.
Any other questions? Tell us where you are and ask your question.
Marcus from Germany.
Marcus, how are you?
How are you? What other methods besides sun gazing have you used?
Well, I wanted my focus today to be on clearing darkness in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There are several ways to bring light into the body. Okay? You actually have to do both. But, you know, you can't put new wine in an old bottle. That's what Jesus said. And what he was saying was, you know, it does you little good to take a bunch of ormus. It does you little good to take in all this light if you are full of darkness. So you got to clean the bottle. You got to clean the vessel. And you do that by purging the emotionality or the darkness which you have stored in your body. And, boy, let me tell you, it begins when you at birth. I mean, you know, things that happen to you from the point of birth begin to implant this darkness. We begin at that time, you know, as we try to satisfy our parents and they say, oh, isn't he so cute? We are building our self-image, and that self-image is usually the beginning of our darkness. And so we have got to deplete ourselves of this darkness as we take in the light. Now it's a combination process. You've got to clear the darkness and you've got to put in the light. You can only take in so much light if the balance of your cells are clogged up with darkness. So we have to get the darkness out in order to increase our spirituality. Our spirituality is nothing more than the ability to take in more light.
So most of that was, all of that was done by sun gazing, enormous, or something else?
Well, it began with sun gazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that for maybe 25 years now, maybe a little more. And it was speeded up with the inclusion of enormous. You know, I started with sunlight, and then I have been continuing with enormous, sunlight and enormous. They both are great assists. But like I say, you know, what you will find, you know, you've read probably some of the things on the list or other things about ormus, but if you take a lot of ormus, it kind of fixes you where you're at. In other words, if you've got a depressing nature about you, ormus just makes you depressed better. You know, and that's really true. But what's actually happening physiologically is if you are not clearing the darkness, the ormus is just sitting there doing nothing because it cannot fill the spaces where darkness is. Ormus is light. Sunlight is light. You cannot put you know, new light in a dark space. You've got to clear out the darkness so more light can come in. And that's the real point I wanted to make today, is that, you know, there's a lot of inner work that has to be done. This is not an easy process. It's some of the most difficult work you'll ever do in your life because it's going to dredge up old memories. It's going to dredge up traumas that, you know, you have long since forgotten. But those things have to be dug up. They have to be brought out. They have to be cleared and settled if additional light is going to go in. You know, it does little good to continue to do sun gazing and to take other ormus if there's no place for it to go. Now, it is true that ormus will heal the body. In other words, if you've got, you know, joint pain, back pain, migraine, headaches, this kind of thing, over time, ormus will actually benefit you from a health standpoint. But at the same time, you could also be using ormus as an assist to help spiritualize yourself. Some people may not be interested in this. I don't know. To me, the real goal here is to perfect or purify each and every cell. You know, cells, the doctors will tell you nowadays, have memories. Well, guess what those memories are? They are what makes you who you are. They are what makes you have the personality you have. I say you must become unemotional and you must become impersonal. I am personal. Okay? And if you can get rid of emotionality, then you will begin purging out the darkness. Now, emotional means that you get offended by something. But to be impersonal means that you take nothing personally. Now, you think of the greatest spiritual entities that have ever lived, okay? My two favorites are Buddha and Jesus, okay? There's more probably written about them than most of the others. But there are others. But you know, take Jesus. He's probably the one that's most familiar to Americans. you know, it didn't matter what they did to him, what they did to his family, what they did to his friends. He didn't care. You know, they could do anything they wanted to him. The world could knock him around. He did not take it personally. That's what it means to become impersonal. And if you become impersonal, what you've actually done is you have made your real self the same as your self-image. Your image of self, meaning that which you project to others, is the real you. You know, we meet sometimes people in our lives where we say, wow, that guy is... what you see is what you get. You know, this is because they put on no airs. You've heard that expression probably. He puts on no airs, or she puts on no airs. In other words, these people, they can meet anybody, they can go anywhere, and they're the same today as they are tomorrow. They're the same today as they were yesterday. They just are like a rock. That means that they are who they present themselves to be. Nothing more, nothing less. My other phone is ringing. Hold on a second. I have to pick it up and hang it up. But anyway, I hope you get my point on that. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, but I was just wanting to know, was it something that you, was it a method that you learned from somewhere else, or was it something... self-discovery on your own?
Well, I've got ideas. You know, I read some of the Desert Fathers. These are the guys, the earliest Christians, actually. You know, they roamed the deserts of North Africa. You know, Christianity actually started in Egypt, not in Palestine. But there was a couple of these Desert Fathers. One of the books, I'm trying to look on my shelf right now for it, but I got a lot out of it. Thomas Kempis, a great philosopher many years ago in Europe, he wrote a book called The Imitation of Christ. That's a good one. I'm trying to find Evangelist. The book is called Practicos, and you can only get it through the Cistercian monks, a lot of the writings of these early desert fathers are preserved only by the Cistercian monks. So if you can find some of the Cistercian monks, get some of those books by the desert fathers. Now, you see, Bhagavatam said that there is a time period. He was studying anger and what caused him to get upset. Now, this is a guy writing 2,000 years ago and probably the best psychologist I've ever encountered. But he said there is a small space during the time that you have a motivation to get angry and how you express that anger. He said there's a small space of time and that you must catch yourself in that small space of time and halt the motivation to get angry. Now, that to me was meaningful. Now, you have to understand also that I was in psychological studies working on a PhD in clinical psychology. To me, that was great, okay? Later, people like Goldman wrote the book called Emotional Intelligence. They talk about the amygdala, you know, that little part in your brain that they say is the fight or flight response place.
Great.
And they will tell you that, you know, you've got to manage this. And there's all kind of techniques about how to do that. But the guy that wrote 2,000 years ago said, you got a stimulus to make you angry. How you're going to handle it is up to you. You can go ahead and get angry, or you can stop it right where it starts. And what I say, and what I did in my personal discovery was to realize that I could, when I got stimulated to get angry, if somebody crossed my path, you know, while I was driving, or they got in my way, you know, I had a tendency to say something, bark at them, you know, say bad things, make gestures. I realized then that I had to stop that. Just like Evagrius said, I got like a couple of seconds there to determine what I'm going to do with that motivation. Okay? And I came up with, for me, it really doesn't matter. If I said that to myself, then it brought me back to my senses. And then I would bless the person. You know, in my mind, I would say, this really doesn't matter. Bless them. I hope they have a great day. You know, in other words, I was training myself. And let me tell you, sometimes you're motivated in a big way. And I would have to say to myself, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. In other words, you have to convince yourself that it doesn't matter. You have to convince yourself, I will not take this personally. You know, I've got some relatives in my family, I guess everybody's got some like this, that they just drive you nuts. You know, and they say stuff or they do things, and you take it personally. Why? Because they're family. I had to train myself to say, I will not take this personally. I will not take this personally. I'd like to kill them, but I will not take this personally. And you have to train yourself to stop this. If you are going to root out emotionality and to become unemotional, as Evagrius said, you must. He said, you cannot spiritualize your body as long as you are filled with darkness. He equated that darkness to emotionality. I do too. And so you have got to stop putting more in, and then as you do, this stuff is going to come out. And as it does, each time you remember something that was offensive or started you on this path of not liking someone or hatred for another or whatever, you've got to say, it really doesn't matter. Each time one of these memories or one of these traumas comes back, you have to then purge it and say, it really doesn't matter. And then, on these long past memories, I would say to myself, part of the reason I'm the way I am is because that happened, so it can't be all bad. In other words, I would be thankful for that experience because of what it taught me. And so I would actually say that. to myself, call it biofeedback in today's lingo, I would say to myself, wow, that was tough to go through at the time, but I'm glad it happened because of what I'd learned from it. You know, and as you do this over and over and over again in your life, and you know, the first few days you're going to do it 100 times a day, it really doesn't matter. I will not take this personally. It really doesn't matter. I will not take this personally. But as you train yourself, and it is a big training, you've got to be dedicated. You've got to be sincere. But it's amazing what load comes off you. It's like you've been baptized, in a sense. It's like you have been given a clean slate. As long as you are no longer putting darkness into your body, the other stuff is going to pour out. And just remember, though your sins were of scarlet, I'm not talking about sins as in there's good and evil, right? I'm talking about anything that damages you from your spiritual existence is sin to you. And so if you have an emotion, that's a sin to you. Though your sins were as scarlet, you can be as white as the snow. But you can only do that if you stop putting in more and then start purging out the ones that are already there. Ormus will help you. Why? Because it brings it to the surface faster. You will have lots of recognition and cognition about how you should act. There's something spiritualizing in Ormus itself. Part of it has to do with the repletion of depleted minerals and things that you know, have bogged your body down. But part of it's also the fact that you are imparting and implanting light. Ormus is light. David Hutton said it was, and I believe it is because of the experience I've had with it. It's just like sunlight. It's just in a liquid form. Hello? Anybody there?
Yep.
Yes, man. We're all here.
Okay.
And listen, while you were...
For a minute, I didn't hear anything. I thought everybody hung up.
No, I'm here, too. I was thinking...
I'm here, too.
Of a great poet.
I'm here, too.
But I had a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure. I can.
Okay, good. Okay. When you are saying it really doesn't matter, are you visualizing something, or what is your mind attached to while you're saying this?
Well, when I'm saying that, I'm thinking light body. My light body doesn't need this. I'm thinking infinite life versus finite life. I'm thinking, this is something that's happening in the finite life. I do not want it to affect my infinite life, okay? And so visualizing what I'm saying is there's two things going on here. There's a duplicity in life. You know, like I said in a recent email, you know, if you take the visual spectrum, or let's say the light spectrum from ultraviolet to infrared, if you look where the visual spectrum is, it's like a tiny percent of everything that's going on around you. So when that person cuts in front of you in traffic, you know, or somebody calls you a bad name, or somebody jumps in front of you in line at the delicatessen or something, and you have a tendency to be upset, I'm saying, I will not take this personally, but what I'm saying is I do not want my infinite life to be affected by this finite happening. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got to learn that there's two things going on in your life. It's not one thing. And where your concern should be is in building your infinite existence and trying to get as far away from the finite as you can. Now, you can never exit the finite existence. You've got to live every day. But you can look at it in a different perspective. You know, you can control it. You know, the infinite is so much greater than the finite. You know, what we see, what we hear, this is such a small portion of what's really going on around us, the energy transactions, the light transactions, you know, the sounds. We can only hear and see in such a small, small part. That's what I'm visualizing. This is just a very small, you know, this idiot that just stepped in front of me is just a small part of the finite life. I'm not going to let it affect the bigger thing that's going on here.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things, am I okay to talk?
Yeah, sure. I can hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
Okay. I'm getting broken up signal, so I'm not sure if it's me or someone else. One of the things that I was wondering if you also do is sort of realize that you created this, and maybe the reason that it's created is to try to or to strengthen your own spiritualdom.
Well, yes, that's very true. Each one of us creates our own reality. We come into this world with certain, I don't know, some people call it karma. I don't know what to call it, but we come in a pattern. We've been here before, I think. And so we have got to learn certain lessons. But, you know, unless we overcome it, we will never learn the lesson. You know, that's the beauty of being this. As we learn to overcome, you know, we have to overcome it all, including death, okay? There's a certain amount of the physical life that's just going to be painful. It's going to be suffering. It's a matter of how we handle it. Now, you know, I just wish I knew what I know now when I was 10 years old. But, you know, that's impossible. I've got children that age right now. And, you know, I try to tell them little tidbits here and there about how to deal with their friends. And I just have my oldest daughter here is now going into the 7th grade. You know, she's in junior high school now, and she thinks she's, you know, hot. And so I have to tell her, this is not important, you know. And they think, are you nuts, Daddy? This is very important. How I look, what I wear, you know, this is important stuff to me. I'm saying, it really doesn't matter. And they're saying, it does matter. You know, I mean, we cannot in our youth learn these things because we have to go through it. We have to go through this training ground. But we will not really learn our lesson until we have realized that it isn't important, that it really doesn't matter, and that we shouldn't take this personally. We have got to purge all that out of us. You know, we have about 70, 80 years or maybe a little more nowadays, but we don't have all that much time. Time passes fast. We are always behind in doing this. And so, you know, the sooner we start, the better. I wish I had known what I know, you know, 50 years ago, but I don't. I didn't. And so there's stuff that I have to clean up. Excuse me? Hello?
Think that someone could have told you, or did you learn it on your own? Would you have been receptive if someone had told you rather than your own exploration?
Oh, listen, I went to Sunday school till I was blue in the face, you know, and then I've had all that kind of training. But, you know, the people that were teaching me then, they didn't know what I know. And they didn't know how to present it. I suppose in a different cultural arrangement, I mean, there's still places I can go here in China where, you know, you see all kinds of things. You see women who have more than one husband. You see men who have more than one wife. I mean, they got every kind of marriage arrangement here. They got the villages and communities where, you know, the people let teenagers be sexually promiscuous with each other until they get it all out of their system, until they get married. And then you got other ones that still veil their women, you know, and boys and girls cannot meet each other Their marriages are still arranged. You see all kinds of arrangements. But, I mean, in a different cultural situation, I suppose, like the Essenes seem to be pretty good at it, they were able to instill these kinds of things into their children at a very young age. I mean, Jesus, for example, is a product of that. By the time he was 12 years old, he was teaching them the temple, you know. Buddha didn't learn it the same way. He had to go through a lot of trial and effort, you know, but that's because of the culture in which we live. So we have to accept the culture in which we live, but these principles are universal. They have to be learned. And that's the basis of our striving for a more spiritual nature.
Tikrit, I'd like to butt in here and ask for any last question from the free room before we close in the free room, and we just continue with the benefactors room, which is the reason why benefactors are benefactors, so they can support Barry, and we encourage that, and so they get extra time with you guys. And so what I'd like to do is ask for a question, the last question, please, from the free room. And then at the end of that, we'll close off the free room for today.
Well, let me just I want to say one thing to everybody, and that is that Ormus will help in this process. It's the best thing I've found as a tangible substance that does this kind of thing. It is a link. It's kind of like a vehicle for human cognition. And it is a link that overrides the time-space continuum. It's both in the finite world and the infinite world. Bo? Hello?
Yeah.
Anybody there?
Yeah.
I keep getting these signals. Well, what I'm saying is, Ormus, I believe, is a link. You know, I think Barry in his discussions talks about it's a connector between mind and spirit. Well, it's a connector between two worlds, the finite and the infinite, and it remains a constant within both of them. So Ormus is good for us as we try to spiritualize, because we can take it in our finite existence, and yet it will still be with us and useful in our infinite existence. And that's why I think it is so wonderful that we have the benefit of this rediscovery in our age.
I just wanted to ask you one thing. I'm having this feeling, like, say, for instance, you get someone who's really down and depressed, that Ormus, by taking it, will give your heart a lift so that you can see a different perspective. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we have to take the perspective of the person that's suffering, that's for sure. And
but the person suffering, it gives them a lift so that they can move forward more quickly into that other spiritual side, that other part you're talking about.
Well, the psychologist in me says that the person will never do anything they don't want to do, okay? There has to be some kind of internal motivation. You've got to light a fire, you know. A lot of times people get depressed because they have no challenges left in life, and sometimes you have to challenge them. You know, I've got people write me all the time. I've got one that I still haven't answered to, and I need to. I'm hoping that she's on the phone. But, you know, when you're dealing with someone else who's got serious problems, like maybe alcoholism or drug abuse or these kinds of things, they have got to want to do better. You cannot do things for them, because if you do, you will help weaken them in the process. You have got to challenge them to do it themselves. You know, we must become individuals. You know, the definition of the word individual is indivisible. A person who is united in wholeness and oneness is actually an individual. Most of us are duplicitous people. You know, we're somebody to one set of friends. We're another somebody to our family. We're another somebody to, you know, a different set of friends or our business associates. We become many different people. We can't do that because if we are, that's a sign that we have, you know, this self-image that we're projecting to different people, and it's a different self-image sometimes to different groups. That's a problem for us. That's darkness. We must be the same person to everybody. We must be who we are. And people who are having these troubles, they don't know who they want to be or what they want to be. They have to decide. Now, sometimes we can lead them into deciding what they want to be and show them what they should do. But, you know, most of the people out there teaching, training, helping people like this are the blind leading the blind. They don't know who they are.
Right. That's true.
Right? I mean, you know, you take a person like Buddha or a person like Jesus, you know, he said, judge not that you be not judged. But then later he said, my judgment is righteous. In other words, he contradicted in his actual existence what he was teaching other people. Judge not that you be not judged. Yes, we should not judge other people. But if you are coming from the constant positive point of infinity, I mean the infinite existence, you can be right. But I know of very few people who are there. You know?
Right.
And if you are there, it's very difficult sometimes to relate to people who are having these dire problems. However, you can be a healing influence in their lives if you know how to handle it.
Right.
It's a tricky business. It's a tricky business when you're dealing with somebody else's life.
Yeah, because you don't know where they are.
You don't know where they are. You don't know who they are.
No. That's right.
And it's very difficult. You will find that as you spiritualize and become more purged of the darkness within you, you will be able to see into them a lot better than you can do now. You know, and the more and more spiritual you get, the more your aura extends and it's penetrating to others. And they will feel it. And sometimes that's all they need. They say, I want to be like you. And so that sometimes is the influence that we can have. But we've got to be right ourselves.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
You are so welcome. I'm thankful that there was somebody here today listening, and I hope I've been able to say some things that can help you, because we're all in this together. In a sense, we're individually in it, but we're all also in it together. We can learn from each other.
Oh, it's so important, and I really value everything that you said. I thank you so much, and I will be going on your website.
Okay.
So you have a wonderful evening or morning wherever you are.
You too. You too. Thank you.
All right. And good night.
Bye-bye. Anybody else got any questions?
I'm dropping the second room.
Yeah. This probably goes to both Sigrid and Barry. In the beginning, you guys were talking about coincidence. And
yeah.
I want to know how much of that is coincidence, percentage-wise, versus how much of that is, let's say, unconscious coincidence versus conscious intent?
Well, I know from my own experience that I can bring it on. Sometime back, I wrote about, you know, I was doing training. I have a company here where we do management training, and I've never done any advertising. It's just word of mouth, and I used to go up, you know, when I wouldn't be getting any contracts for a while because I wasn't actually out there pushing it. I would go up on my rooftop, and, you know, as I was meditating and sungazing, I would say, okay, God, I'm doing all that I can do. I need a little assist here. And whenever I would ask, you know, I'd go back down to my office, and I'd have a fax or I'd have a telephone call. Or the phone would ring 3 or 4 times, and these are people inquiring about my service. Call that a coincidence? I don't think so. I think that's, you know, something that I brought on because of my willingness to present myself humbly to the face of God in the heavens and say, I'm asking, you know, I need something. You know, I'm doing my part. Can you help me? In other words, I think sometimes coincidences help, are helped by your desire for them. Does that answer your question? In other words, I think a lot of times coincidences are self-created.
Yeah, I was just wondering, a lot of times people think a lot of things are happening coincidentally. And there's
remember that we each create our own existence. We create our own reality. Mm-hmm. We can make that reality whatever we want. In this latest email I wrote, I was trying to present the message that, you know, if we don't like things the way they are, we can make it different. It just takes our own power within to decide what we want. Problem with most people is they don't know what they want. If we can determine what we want, if we want more abundance in our lives, there's a way to get it. If we want more happiness in our life, there's a way to get it. We actually create what we want. You know, if we want more depression in our life, we can make that. You know, these things feed on each other. Happiness begets happiness. You know, spiritualization begets more spiritualization. Where we place our thoughts, they will bear children, and you know, we will bask in the blessings of those, whatever our thoughts are. So we do create all around us. We are creative beings. This is one of our hidden assets. As a person becomes more and more spiritual, they will realize the real power that they have. If we actually knew how powerful we are, it would scare us to death. We are creative beings. We can do all the miracles if we but have the faith and belief that we can, and then go about doing the things that create them. This is a part of the spiritual life, is realizing the great power that we have. Can I answer your question?
Yeah, well, I was just looking at it with a more of a quantitative statement that says, well, when I started, I was doing things, and most of the time it was 70% of the things that I did was unconscious, coincidence. And now I'm able to control it to the point that I can do it. Whenever I put my mind to it, I get the answer 100% of the time. That is to say, let's say I wanted to, in the sense of, you have the psychokinesis, and you're bending a spoon or something like that, and you guys doing it, and they'll try to do it, and they can only do it one out of every 10 or one out of every 20. And after practicing it for a while, they're up to 7 out of 10 or something.
Yeah, well, all things spiritual, you know, the blessings of the spirit, they take practice. We get better at stuff the more we do it. You know, Sandy Koufax, the great pitcher, always, you know, people said, gee, I wish I could throw a baseball like you. And he said, I practiced 10,000 hours throwing a baseball, you know, and he got better at it as he did it, you know, and that's true. The great musicians, you know, one lady hearing a violin in concert, went to the great master and said, I'd give half my life if I could play the violin like you do. And he said, lady, that's just exactly what I have given, half my life. to play this way. And so, you know, whether it's practical, finite things or whether it's things of the spirit, we get better at them the more we do them. And spiritual things also take practice.
Yeah, I just wanted to know whether how you felt about that yourself, that you were feel that you're five times better than you were before or twice as good as you were before you started.
Oh, I scare myself sometimes. You know, I think the measure of faith is how fast something happens after you ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can materialize it instantly with the thought, I think you may have arrived, you know, at the state you want to be at or maybe our highest potential.
Mm-hmm.
If it takes 10 minutes or if it takes a half an hour, if it takes 3 days or 2 weeks, you know, I think that's a measure of the actual faith that we have. I believe if we visualize something, it's like looking through a grid. We have to put the fine details in there. If we don't have details, then we won't get exactly what we want. You know, we have to know, first of all, what we want, and then we have to go about expressing the spiritual energy that will make that thing manifest. I believe that we can do that, but it takes practice.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the better at it you get, the scarier it gets, because you have to be careful what you think about. I've had this experience. I've been traveling places and wondering who I was going to meet and what I was going to meet and who I thought I might want to meet. You know, like when I travel on an airplane, I always say a little prayer before I fly, and that is that please put me in a seat next to somebody who has something to teach me or somebody who needs to hear something I need to say. And, you know, it's random. You don't know who you're going to sit by or who's going to pull the seat ticket next to you. And I have been absolutely amazed at some of the people I have sat by on airplanes simply because I asked for it. You know, and that happens really quickly. And sure enough, I have sat by some spectacular people, and I've also sat by people who were in great need. And they, you know, they blessed me for telling them what they told me. I've had people tell me, wow, this is great. I'm glad I sat next to you. You know, did I create that? I think so. But it's scary sometimes when you realize the power that we do have.
Okay, and then what was the scariest event for you then?
How fast it happens.
Oh, just that. Oh, what was the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about scary, fearful. I'm talking about it's scary how well this works.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can ask for something, 30 seconds later, it's happening.
Great. Do you have any other questions? I have something to say. This is Dennis here in sunny, gorgeous
okay.
Sydney. I'm down in Sydney at the moment. And we are going to run out of conference time in around about quarter of an hour.
Yeah.
So I would like you to address any other subject that you haven't addressed that you'd like to in the next quarter of an hour, so we can
okay.
close down at on the hour in about, I guess, about 17 minutes.
Okay, hold on. Let me look at. I'm trying to pull up my list here. There's been a lot of discussion about the superconductivity of Ormus, and David Hudson had a lot to say about that. And you know, one of the quotes he says is that when electrons pair, they convert to light. It's no longer a particle, but it becomes pure light. Any amount of light can exist in any space-time. If it has no particle aspect, so light flows into it and it gets more and more light, but it does not reside in space-time. I believe that he was absolutely right, and that this Ormus, as I mentioned before, imbues the body with additional light. We just have to make sure that the container into which we are putting it is a worthy vessel, if it's a clean vessel. So our job is to, as we use Ormus, to begin eliminating the darkness that may be impeding the flow of light within us. Okay, that's one of the things I wanted to say. Also, he spoke about this junk DNA in our bodies. And, you know, I don't believe anything in the human body is junk. I believe that Ormus helps us become smarter, more intelligent. That's nothing more, I believe, than the fact that we are being able to utilize more and more of the actual capacity that we had from the beginning. You know, they say we use only a limited amount of our brains now. but we can expand that. Another thing I want to say is something that I had written about quite recently, and that is that I think we spend too much time on thinking that the brain in our body is the most important thing, you know, to stabilize. I do not think so. I believe that the solar plexus in the body, which if you take the surrounding plexus as to which it's connected, it's a substantial mass of energy receiving and sending apparatus that's in everybody's body. That is the organ of spiritualization. Most of us are not familiar with the power in the solar plexus. You know, and I'll tell you how I came to this realization. After I'd been sun gazing for quite a long time, I began to realize why they call this the solar plexus. Because when you intake sunlight, and the same is true with Ormus, after you get saturated with high-intensity light, you actually feel cramping in your solar plexus. In other words, when light comes in, it goes to the optic chiasma behind the retinas at the pineal gland. That pineal gland then shoots all that energy straight down to the solar plexus. You know, we know this organ as the solar plexus, but it is directly connected with light. And whether we're taking in Ormus through sunlight or through Ormus itself, this is speaking to our solar plexus. And our solar plexus is the organ of feeling in the body. The brain is the organ of emotion. So we need to concentrate and focus on the benefits to our body of our solar plexus. We cannot overlook it. It is the heart. It is the true heart. If you study the ancient Egyptian literature, they always talked about the true heart. The true heart is not the heart beating within our breast or chest. It is the solar plexus. There's an arc of light that goes from the solar plexus to our brain. And right in the center of it is our blood-pumping heart. This is the triad of, or the holy trinity of our bodies. But you cannot, heart and brain won't do it. You've got to include the solar plexus. There is a law of three in the world, in the spirit world, and all the parts must be included. So we have to focus energy and mind in the solar plexus. If we do, then that will increase our ability to expand it and its influence. What we do in the spirit world is connected through our solar plexus. This is an organ that deals in the unseen world. Our brain deals in the finite world. Our solar plexus deals in the infinite. Therefore, we cannot overlook it. We have to feed it. It is the heart and mind of our light body. So that's one point that I wanted to bring out that I hadn't yet covered.
Is that why it's called the solar plexus? Because it's connected to the light?
We didn't name it in our day. It's been called this from the time of the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Greeks. Because they knew it was connected to the sun and to the light of the sun. Pardon me?
Does the solar plexus, is that where the Ormus is centered when it comes into the body? Is that the spiritual connection?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it goes all over the body, but I think its concentration is in the solar plexus.
Okay, I think so too.
Because, you know, I mean, the solar plexus is the seat of our feelings. And, you know, though I have argued with my professors, I say that feelings are not emotions, and emotions are not feelings. They are different. And I think I wrote something about that recently, but we have got to convince ourselves in our minds also, and maybe learn a new language, that feelings are not emotions, emotions are not feelings. We want to do away with all emotions. We want to become unemotional. But what we want to do is build up our feelings. Feelings are spiritual. And they are centered in the solar plexus. And I believe that Ormus influences that area of our body much more so than it does anywhere else.
I want to ask one more question, and then, you know, I'm becoming more and more sophisticated and aware about where you're coming from. I'm a longtime meditator, and I realize that that works really with the mental aspect in a lot of ways, that while you're meditating, things are still going on in your body.
Yes.
You know that your body is, it is not the center. It is a certain part, and it does bring up a lot of things. But it is not, the mind is working with the mind, and while you're meditating, your body's doing other things.
That's right.
The center,
meditation is centered in the solar plexus also.
It is.
The mind is from the solar plexus. You know, the mind is not in the head. It's not in the brain. You know, I mean, sometimes I go on mental vacations. In other words, I can remember lots of places I've been before. And I can actually be there. I can be on the beach in Indonesia, or I can be in the mountains of Tibet in my mind. And you know what? I'm actually there. And that is from the solar plexus. I can actually hear, excuse me, I can actually hear the bubbling streams, or I can hear the wind in the palm trees. And that's the mind. The mind can take you anywhere. It's not necessarily located in the head. It's everywhere in the body, but it's centered in the solar plexus. Does that answer your question?
You were saying about the law of three. Now, it would be the mind and the solar plexus and what else?
The heart.
The heart. Okay.
Yeah. The heart lies directly... Almost even directly between the solar plexus and the brain.
Right.
The brain is nothing more than a plexus also. The solar plexus is flat and it's laid out, you know, very thin across the abdomen of the body. It actually starts just below the sternum, whereas it's all wrapped up in the brain. The reason the solar plexus is more sensitive is because it is flat. It's not, you know, it's gray matter covered with white matter. The brain is white matter covered with gray matter. That's why the solar plexus is more communicated with the infinite and more communicated with sensitive things than the brain. As I said in one of the previous writings, I believe in the Bible where it talks about, you know, the lion and the lamb shall lie down together. In our daily lives, we have a struggle between feelings and emotions. The brain is strong and directs us to do a lot of things, but if we offend the feelings that we have in the solar plexus, we're going to get ill. We'll get physically ill. We'll get an upset stomach. We'll get acid stomach because the solar plexus is warning us, watch out. And ultimately, the solar plexus has greater strength than the brain itself. It is probably the most powerful plexus in the body. The brain is the lion. The solar plexus is the lamb. One day, the lion and the lamb shall lie down together. And when they do, then we will have reached an optimum spiritual existence.
And Ormus is the superconductor that helps to unite them, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I absolutely believe that.
Okay, that's great. Now, listen, we've got enough time for one more question or one more subject before we wind up.
Yeah, I have something that I need to do, a little housekeeping thing. The program I used to record this cut off at 1 hour. So
uh-huh.
I was not able to get, I had to go to a different program to record, and so I lost about maybe 10 minutes, I'm not sure. And I'm wondering if anyone else recorded.
Well, I'm trying to record it right now.
Did you get the middle part of the program?
I came, did it, at, I started at 20 before the hour, and it's still going.
Good set. Good. Could you send me a copy of that?
Yeah, it's a digital, it's at 192 kilobits on MP3. And right now, it's at 187 megs.
Is that Jesse?
Marcus.
Marcus.
Ah.
Yeah, Barry is saying, is it possible for you to send him a copy of it?
Yeah, I'll just put it up there for him to take off.
Okay.
Convert it. Can you convert it to a small MP3 first?
For sure, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
So listen, let's just go with the last question.
Yes.
Have you read Rudolf Steiner?
I've read some of him. I've never sat down and, you know, gone through everything he's written, but I know of him, yeah.
Well, you know, Ormus, I haven't used Ormus a lot, but this is Bonnie in San Diego, but I've meditated and I've worked in Rudolf Steiner and Christianity and Buddhism, and that was my work in college. I got with my degrees to get spiritual and religious studies. But what I wanted to ask you is, is this work with the feelings and the emotions, and I have found that great music, great spiritual music, is similar to Ormus. Or what I want to say is that music seems to make Ormus in my body and my mind and my soul. It lifts me to a higher level in my feelings and makes me so I don't, it makes me unlearn hatred. When there's
I think everything is basically frequency, and when we get harmonious frequencies, I think that is also speaking to the solar plexus.
Okay.
You know, some of this mind-boggling music that they have today.
No, I don't mean that.
It speaks to the brain, but not to the heart, not to the true heart.
Yeah, I mean like great Beethoven or great Bach or great music like that, the great classical music sometimes.
And yeah, I agree with you that the body is manufacturing. It will manufacture whatever we need. And I believe that the stimulus for the manufacturing comes from various sources, and music is one of them. I mean, that's why music can make you high, or it can make you low, it can make you happy, it can make you sad. It's because it does speak to your feelings.
Is Ormus similar to that?
I don't think so, because I think Ormus is more physical.
Oh.
And probably has a, whereas the body has to make, Ormus from music, Ormus that you take orally is readily available.
Okay.
Bonnie, I'd like
the more Ormus you have in you, the more Ormus your body will also make them, because more Ormus is attractive, to other sources of Ormus.
I'd like to comment on that, Bonnie. The Ormus seems to be the carrier for the sound, the carrier for the thought. The air carries our thought. When the air is thicker, it carries it better. So the denser the medium, the better the sound travels. And in the same way, the denser the medium of thought, the better the sound travels. But still, if you have a thought that's very harmonious or a sound that's very harmonious, that increases the harmony throughout the body. If you have more Ormus, it increases it better.
Thank you. Just so you guys know, that was Barry.
Yeah, thank you.
So,
any other questions?
We're pretty much at our time now.
Okay.
So I think we should wind up. And in 2 weeks' time, we're having our first of the month live alchemy official with the alchemists, including the raffle. And that will be Thomas of Cherokee Gold.
Okay.
Now, I got some of Thomas's products last week. He sent it to me, and I have to tell you, it's nice.
God bless you, Dennis.
Thank you. Well, I have to tell you, I really enjoyed it, and I noticed it as soon as I pulled out of the box, and I get a hit off it before I've even had a swig. I'm not kidding. I'm going, this is nice. I can just feel an expansion happening before I've even got the lid off. Now, this stuff will be good. I'm telling myself even before I have a swig. So Thomas is our guest next week, and Thomas has a unique slant on Ormus. In other words, he's a guy who makes Ormus out of the magnetic trap system, which is quite a different animal in the Ormus kingdom. And I don't even have ways that I can define it or describe it, except that it's expensive, except that it's nice. And this whole realm is the realm of expanded frequencies. And I love that comment about the music, because I notice just the same effect that I get when I'm having a really expanded space from meditation or from taking Ormus. And I started taking white powder gold. I got that from the Ether Group in Toronto. And the very different kinds of Ormus that I've had, and when I listen to really good Brahms or Mozart, I'm going, wow, how come I haven't really appreciated this much before?
Mm-hmm.
And I really resonated with the comment that Barry made, that Ormus attracts Ormus, and anything Ormus like, in other words, anything that's also hugely expansive and uplifting. And I'm thrilled to be part of this process of getting alchemists, the real deal guys, the guys who really make a difference, who produce really fine products, as guests on these calls. And so in 2 weeks' time, like I said, whatever the date is, I've got now, I'm not in front of my diary. In 2 Saturdays' time in the US, 2 Sundays' time in Asia and Australia. Thomas of Cherokee Gold, and we will have a raffle then. And I look forward to seeing and hearing, hearing you guys then. And if you want to do anything, invite some of your Ormus buddies on to listen to these calls and get themselves educated. Because I believe we've got a fast-growing community here, people who actually start to hear each other and get to know each other. And it's lovely to hear people like Bonnie for the first time.
Thank you.
And some of the old regulars. And I thank you very much for joining us today. And
Well, it's been my pleasure to be the speaker today. And I hope some of the things that I spoke about will be beneficial to people. I know that I feel quite humble at being asked to speak, and it's always a pleasure because I've been through a lot in my life, and if I can pass on a few of the ideas that I've learned, then that you know can benefit others, then I'm more than happy to do it.
I had to call with you, Sigrid, as our guest. Thank you for that.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And if you guys just want to say who you are and thank you and sign off, we'll finish it in the crescendo of goodbyes.
Okay. Well, this is Sigrid, and it's been my pleasure to speak to you today, and I hope that we can all go upward and onward through the fog as we learn more and more about this wonderful substance called Armas and are able to see how we can better utilize it. That's it.
Thank you, Mike. That was great.
This is Bonnie. Thank you so much, everyone. Blessings be
thanks
to all of you.
This is Thomas saying goodbye. I'll talk to you all in a couple weeks, and thanks a lot, Sigrid. I couldn't agree more with what you're saying.
Hey, thank you very much.
And this is Darren from Tennessee, and thanks for the talk.
Welcome.
This is Shandaya. Thank you so much.
Shandaya, there's a package in the mail for you, I think, if you haven't gotten it already.
Oh, I think I may have already gotten it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember your name.
Yeah.
Something that recently gone out.
Yes, I'm enjoying it, and I love my mala prayer bracelet as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Glad you like it.
It means a lot to me. Thank you.
Good, good. Glad you like it. Is that everybody then?
Thank you. This is Alex from Sunshine Texas. That was excellent. Thank you very much. My first conference call. Thank you.
Okay, Sigrid signing off.
Bye. Thank you very much, Sigrid. I really appreciate your fantastic contribution. And once again, I just feel nicely, quietly expanded and a tad elated, in fact.
Yeah, okay. I'll put an onward. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Catch you soon. So I'm signing off myself now. Do you want to say anything, Barry?
Good job, and I think I'm getting this recording thing down. I spent all day today getting a recorder set up and didn't test it enough.
Well, the angels gave you Marcus in Germany, who sounds like he knows what he's doing.
There you go.
And he did it, I think.
Good.
He sounded like he really knew. Are you still there, Marcus? Thank you.
Hello? Oh, sorry. I got a cat here bugging me.
So you did get it from like 20 after the hour, huh? Or 20 after the hour?
Yeah, I started when it came in at 20 before the hour, and it's still running.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Well, listen, guys, I'm going to sign off, and thank you so much for your participation.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you, Dennis.